It has been a long time, Yoni.
I know, I don't know what happened.
It's okay. Grab your cider, girl.
I got this. And
I'm Jessica.
I'm Yonit.
Welcome to the Kiddush Book Club.
L'chaim.
L'chaim clink.
I'm so happy.
So we said clink because we probably shouldn't touch glasses.
Yeah, also we're using plastic and the boing doesn't really satisfy the same.
That's true. We are recording this right after Rosh Hashanah.
Yes.
And it is a new year.
Thank God.
That's 5781 is the new year of all good things.
Hashem. Please, it should be for good things.
It already is.
It is. It's true. It's true. The air is fresh.
The smoke is gone
The
in
smoke is
Seattle.
gone.
That's right.
You know, the weather's turned.
Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who passed away, Zichrona Levracha, passed away in 5780. So that's
Yeah.
not a bad thing that happened this
That's
year.
fair. We can't blame this year for that. That's
Right.
fair. That's
Everyone's
fair.
talking like, oh, this year started off really terribly. I'm like,
Last year
no.
ended with a
Last year
real
ended
kick in the butt.
with something really sad, right? But it didn't start. And by the way, just in honor of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg is you don't have to be a Democrat or Republican or anything to look at a person who's spent their entire life serving their country and trying to do it according to the law and in truth and in justice and in, seeking the right way every single day of her
Did you
life.
watch the movie about her life?
I did, and it was good.
I was surprised because of what I see in the news
Yeah.
and the parodies. It seemed like she was larger than life, and then the movie, she's like, you'd pass her in a room necessarily because she would be quiet. She's not the life of the party. She's not. Like,
Right.
you assume that women who make history are ballsy broads, because that's what we assume. You can only do great things if you could do that, right?
Right.
Like, and that's not who she was at all. And that's what surprised me the most about her, I guess, loosely based
You're talking
autobiographical
about the
movie.
one where it's her when she's like young and becoming a new mommy and trying to be a law professor. And yeah, that was a great
Yeah, it
movie.
was really great.
And the scene where her daughter yells at the guys who whistle at her. That was so good because the
Oh, the one
Ruth.
I saw was just interviews.
Oh, no, you're talking about a documentary. I'm talking
The
about the fictionalized
documentary.
version of her life.
I
That
haven't
was
seen
a
that one.
great film. And now we have to switch and I'll
Okay,
watch the
fine.
doc and
Yes.
you'll watch the movie because it
Yes.
was
The
wonderful.
documentary was amazing, and I was just
Yeah.
like, wow.
Okay, we'll definitely
Yeah.
switch.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah.
she, I was reading The Guardian, which is a newspaper based out of England, did a terrible bio of her where they talked about her having abandoned her faith and they said it twice. And they never mentioned her being Jewish again, which, listen, obviously you're there to talk about her being a justice, but the only time you mention her being Jewish is to say she wasn't. That was wrong. So in response to that, people have been sharing all the speeches that she gave, I didn't know that she gave, like at the Holocaust Museum or when she was in Tel Aviv. Like she gave all these speeches and they were wonderful the way she talks about it. So.
Yeah, even a mutual friend of ours posted about meeting her in off of Congress when there was an event for a Jewish judge there, and they showed up to wish Mazel Tov. And just encountering her, there. So it sounds like, okay, leaving the faith is not really a thing when you're still connected and supporting other members of the tribe. Like, that's
Right.
not really how that
If you're still
works.
participating in the culture.
Yeah.
And also you people don't understand how Judaism works. You
Right. The
can't leave
Guardian does
it.
not necessarily get to decide how that
Right.
works.
Like unless you stand up and announce, "Hello, I have left the faith today."
Oh no, it's not a trait. You don't have to announce your departure.
Yeah, you don't have to tell us you're leaving. So speaking of surprisingly Jewish books, let's talk about my favorite read of the year, and I'm sure one of yours, which is Today, Tonight, Tomorrow by Rachel Lynn Solomon.
I read it so long ago because I was on like one of the preview teams.
Yeah,
So for
lucky
me, it's
you.
like, I know I keep like checking people like, have you read it yet? Have you read it yet? Have you read it yet? Have you read it yet?
Yeah, because it's
So.
surprising. It's surprising. Because, listen, I write YA, I read YA, I love, you know, young adult fiction. I don't think it's necessarily for teens, although I have a couple example ones we'll talk about that really Dafka are for teens. Like, they are not for adults, and the author knows that going in. But some books are what I would call, like, 100% crossover. And Today, Tonight, Tomorrow is one of those even the, but when you read the blurb, you wouldn't think it would be, because the blurb is really about high schoolers on their last night of high school.
Right. But it's not really. It's about them as people and, like, you know, growing out of their skin a little bit and, you know, just, like, figuring out who they are, which I think anyone can relate to. I think people do it regularly.
It's that feeling, like, on Rosh Hashanah, you know, you have that feeling where you have to sit around and check yourself and go, was I the wrong one here? Mm. Right? So, like, I feel like the main character of Today, Tonight, Tomorrow, as the book goes on and she is engaging with the guy she thought was her worst enemy in high school, even though they texted each other every single morning to say, like, I'm going to beat you today.
So cute.
Right.
She thought they hated
each other, but he thought they were, like, that it wasn't hate. And so she's realizing as it goes, wait a minute, I had all these feelings of malice that didn't go both directions. He didn't hate me. He thought we were playing, and I really thought he was awful, and I was mean.
But it's also like, you know, neither of them had ever taken the time to get to know each other, so what they hated was very surface.
Yes.
So, like, any animosity was just very, like, I mean, you're not your whole self in high school,
yes.
Right?
Oh, 100% not.
And so both characters are the same way. They were not their whole selves for various reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to connect over, like, taking a peek behind the curtain to see, like, oh, is that what you're like at home? Or is that what you're like outside of this hatred we have for each other? Like, who are you to other people?
You know, and one of those things is I feel like today, because of social media and because of access to the world, that teenagers do have a different high school experience. Not necessarily in a bad way, but they have a high school experience where they feel they have to define themselves in high school. They do feel like they have to have a presence and a brand, a personal goal. Whereas when we were in high school, it was rare when someone knew what they wanted to do with their lives. Yeah. You know, kids today really do feel, a lot of them, that they have to finish high school saying, I'm in this box.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't know. I feel like as a graduate of Gifted and Talented that, like, my classmates and I were kind of, like, beaten over and over again. Like, get good grades. Be the top. Be, you know, like, don't be A. And so, like, that was, like, that, I think, defined us. And if I look at the folks I was in class with, like, some of them cracked real early.
Yeah.
Some of them cracked later. Some of them, like, figured it out how to, like, you know, what they needed to do to kind of, like, I don't know, mellow from that.
Well, it's the curse of the gifted kid. The gifted kid is just the kid that learned everything before everybody else, not necessarily the kid that's smarter.
Oh, yeah.
So when they're all 18, they're all the same. And I think that's something else that the character realizes in Today, Tonight, Tomorrow is, I was the gifted kid, and because I was the gifted kid, and so was he, the boy, we've both been directed down the same gifted track. And we finished high school, and we look around and realize everyone else finished too. Mm-hmm. Everyone else graduated also. Everybody else is going to college. Everyone else is, you know, getting A's. We just thought we were ahead. And because we thought it was in our heads that we were ahead, we're competing for valedictorian and we're competing for the top position. But none of that's going to matter in a month from now.
Yeah.
We're all going to, especially because...
Immediately afterwards.
Yes.
Well, immediately afterwards, it didn't matter.
It didn't matter right away. Yeah. Especially because part of the book is that they're competing in a scavenger hunt through Seattle on their last night of school. It's like a senior class tradition. And what she realizes really fast is that by the time the night is over, the top 10 students who are still playing the game isn't just her and the other gifted kid. It's a bunch of other kids too.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, you don't get to be at the top the rest of your life. And I think that that's hard. Yeah. It's a hard thing to realize.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because at my graduation, I was like, who are all these other people?
You know? How many kids were in your high school class?
400 graduating.
Whoa.
I only knew the top 50. Wow. I wouldn't say top 50, but I only knew 50 of the kids because we were the ones who had classes together. I just didn't have classes.
You were funneled with them.
With the other people. Exactly. Yeah. And so I was like, oh my gosh, there were so many people. And then my reunion was supposed to be this year and they had a Facebook group. And again, I'm like, who are these people? And they're posting pictures of parties, and I was like, I was definitely not invited to any of these parties.
What movie did that was Booksmart with Beanie Feldstein, right? Where they realized on their last night of school that everyone else partied and got A's, but they got A's but never went to parties because they didn't realize you could do both. And I thought that was a great premise to a movie.
I do not regret not going to parties.
Right. Well.
It was not my scene.
Yeah, same. But this book was one of those books where Friday night I stayed up till 2 in the morning.
Yes, I did that. So, you know, it was one of those where I think I'm going to be real smart, and so I'll make sure the lights turn off, but mm-hmm. the bathroom light stays on, so I get a backache sitting with my back against the tub on the bath mat, you're reading from the light of the bathroom.
Oh, no, that's you need a Shabbos lamp.
Yeah, but, like, the whole point is it's supposed to force me to go to bed.
Oh, I see.
But
it doesn't work if you're reading a book you really love.
Correct. So I was like, well... bathroom it is.
Well, so another example. Okay, so I was talking about this a little bit before because it's a book I enjoyed. Mm-hmm. But it's a book where I thought to myself, if somebody didn't enjoy this, it would not be because it was a bad book. It would be because they didn't realize it was for teenagers. Mm-hmm. And that mm-hmm. book was U.S. for Perfect from Laura Silverman, mm-hmm. who it is objectively a good book mm-hmm. about a Jewish teenage boy, just like, oh, we didn't even talk about the Jewish stuff today, tonight, tomorrow.
Oh, I know, because there's just so much to talk about.
I don't
want to,
spoilers, though. I don't want to give any of it away.
Yeah, I'm not going to give any spoilers. Okay. There's a lot of Jewishness, a lot of Seattle-ness. It was very, heartwarming for me, and I'll never think about freckles the same way again.
Oh. So The U.S. for Perfect is also about a Jewish teenage boy. And he's, like, in love with this guy who's his friend, his family friend for a long time, who helps him study for calculus. And that's obviously... So one by one, he brings friends and boyfriends and family members into his life that he feels obligated to, mm-hmm. while also trying to snag valedictorian. So one by one, he takes on more obligations because he's the guy that says yes. Oh. He's the guy that is amiable. And everyone likes him.
Hufflepuff.
His boyfriend likes him and his friends like him. Full and his Hufflepuff. College friends come back to see him. Yeah. And his... Oh, and that's something that happens a lot in the book also is they talk about what house they're in. They're very into Harry Potter in the book. And they talk about what house they're in. And he's definitely a Hufflepuff. Or I think someone calls him a Huffleclaw.
I was going to say, I mean, maybe Ravenclaw. But
yeah, because he's going for auditorium, but he can't keep saying... yes to people all the time, or he's gonna go have a mental nervous breakdown. Yeah. By Yom Kippur, it's been 3 weeks into school, and by Yom Kippur, he's already almost crashing his car.
Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah, so that's what the book is. Yeah. But if you are an adult reading it and couldn't connect anymore to the stress of trying to be the best in high school and not knowing what to give up and getting into Harvard, then you might be a person that goes on Goodreads or Amazon and says, 1 star, this reads like it was written for teens.
And you're like, ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, it was.
Genius.
Yes.
It's funny because you have the Magical Misfits up there.
Yeah.
And it's by Neil Patrick Harris. So he narrates the audiobook.
Of his own story?
Of his own story. And it's funny because I was listening to it while I was driving on a road trip with my kids because I was like, I need something where... I'll know 100% that I can play it out loud in the car. Not that they listened or paid attention at all. But it was super engaging. And all through the way, I'm like, this is definitely a children's book. Because he's reading it. And he's not just reading it. He's like Neil Patrick Harrising it.
Yes.
So, you know, it's goofy and it's kind of silly and it's overly dramatic and this and that. But I was like, I'm hooked. I'm here for this. Like, I know what I'm getting myself into. This is not a... an adult book, 100%, right?
But neither was Harry Potter when we were in college. Right.
So it's about a child who, again, how much can I say? A child who did not have a gentle upbringing mm-hmm. and his discovery on who he is and what makes a person, your decisions make a person.
Right.
Contrasting with people in his life who make choices that impact or don't impact him, I guess.
Yeah, I love that you're trying not to give away any spoilers. Would you like me to just read the blurb?
By the way,
you know what I discovered today? The origin of the word blurb?
Yeah.
There was a nonsense writer in 1907 who was trying to promote his book, so he thought he would put a bunch of fake quotes promoting the book on the back to be funny, to make fun of the way publishers put quotes on the jacket. Publishers never had a name for what those were called. Mm-hmm. So he named his, celebrity endorser... I think Miss Belinda Blurber or something. And then he had her saying how blurberous and blurby the book was. And like, it was a nonsense word because he was a nonsense poet. That's what he did. So it was apparently a nonsense word that publishers started.
That's amazing. Yeah, I love it.
Isn't that amazing? So Miss Belinda Blurberton or Blurber.
And like, yet there is editors and reviewers everywhere who are like, you just met at that word. It's not a word.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah. It's not. I just nouned that verb so hard.
And now it's a word forever. So he was actually famous for making up verbs all the time, nice. For taking nouns to turn into verbs. So, okay. You want me to read the blurb?
Yes, please.
A blurb is just an endorsement or description of the contents of a book or film or any artistic endeavor. Carter, let me share a bit of advice. Despite the shine of this place, the magician held up his hands to indicate the whole carnival. There are some very dark elements at work here. If they knew of your talents, they would certainly try to take advantage of you, to make you think the way they do. I advise you not to give in. Instead, trust your instincts. That will serve you well in ways you've yet to witness. I assure you, you are closer than you think. It's got a blurb from Lemony Snicket. And it's about a kid named Carter who's a street magician who never expects to find friends and magic in a sleepy New England town. Yeah. So I actually heard Neil Patrick Harris... Elisa, were you there? Did you go to this? No. We went, a couple of us, to go hear him. Did you not notice the...
I did not.
The autograph in the book?
Oh, I'm so jealous. I can't autograph an Audible book, but I have it audio.
Wait, so here's the best part. First of all, it was amazing. The room was full. He's so cute. My friend wants to run away with him. His husband's married to a guy, too, so that's not going to work out. I'm like, but here's what happens. Yeah. So what happens is he gives this entire thing about the book and he answers questions about why he likes writing for kids. And then at the beginning of the show, he like called up a kid and had the kid write something down and put it in his pocket or something and walk away from the stage. Like he never saw what was written. The kid went back to his seat. At the end of the show, he performed a magic trick. And the magic trick culminated with him lifting up his shirt. And what was written on the kid's piece of paper was written on his stomach. That means, Yonit, that Neil Patrick Harris spent the entire 2-hour presentation with that written under his clothes.
You know, who knows what's under there?
Who knows what? You never know. He is so committed to being a stage magician.
Love it.
That he showed up to an event. He sat in his hotel room in Seattle, lifted up his shirt, took out his marker, and wrote something on his stomach. And then he did a trick to try to get the kid to write that thing on a piece of paper and so that he could reveal it at the end. That is commitment.
It is commitment.
And you liked the book.
I did. I really enjoyed it. It was also, like I said, it was very entertaining to listen to while I was driving because it has a lot of action and a lot of, he uses good words and descriptors and, you know, characters. And I just, it was... It kept me awake during a long haul drive, which is saying something.
I usually just listen to music, but I think maybe next time I'll do a book.
I will say that, you know, I love Stephen King, but some of the audiobooks are not engaging.
Okay.
I actually went to sleep during Dark Tower woke up during some part of the action that was like unexpected considering that the first part was so dry and boring. I mean, the person reading it was not emoting as much as Neil Patrick
Harris. I think you got to get a good one. Right? Yeah, somebody was saying that they got someone who's going to read their book and the person wasn't Jewish and they called the author to ask them how to pronounce everything. And like, really, like, please record for me.
But share it.
Yeah, like, right, as opposed to on that one, was it a DC show or a Marvel show where someone said Bisharat? I can't remember, but my kids thought it was really funny.
Arrow?
Maybe.
Was the Arrow, yeah.
One of them said Bisharat, and my kids were, that's so funny. You gotta get the pronunciation right.
Yeah.
So, the whole thing. We're gonna talk about something that I'm angry about now.
Uh-oh, what happened?
Midnight Sun is what happened.
Oh, yeah, you know, it's funny because I think that I asked you multiple times how it was.
And?
And you were not frank with me.
I thought it was going well.
And then I keep seeing online, I'm like, every time I keep pinging you, I'm like, Jessica, everyone I follow on TikTok and Bookstagram and BookTok and Bookstagram and Twitter and everything, they're talking about book burning and you're not giving me that impression. Here's so what's what happened. Happening?
I was so excited to re-enter this world. I was not a teenager when the books came out.
Yeah, no, me
so either. I did not have the issue of, nostalgia, and I remembering it wrong. I was in my 20s.
Yeah.
I had a kid. I was able to discern a book I enjoyed from a book I did not. Mm-hmm. I picked up book three backs and I read it. It was still good on its own. Mm-hmm. I thought they were good. Mm-hmm. Because she is not actually a bad writer. No. Right? The 50 Shades of Grey ripoff is bad.
It's bad.
But I'll say that it's not fun to read, but it's bad.
Bella is not a good character, but the book and the story was good.
Listen, if her intention was that she doesn't have to be perfect, Bella.
That's fair. She is nobody, so she could be anybody.
She could be anybody.
She could be you. She could be me.
Yeah. We could all make those same mistakes when we're 18.
Yeah.
And let a guy gaslight us a little bit.
If you're 18 and there's a strange man in your bedroom, call the police.
Do not say, oh no, did I say anything stupid in my sleep?
No, call the police.
Instead, say, get out of my house.
That is illegal.
Yes, please get out.
Stalking.
I'm going to stab you with a wooden stick.
So,
mm-hmm. Yes, it was, so here's what happens. I'm thinking these original books are great. The novella was wonderful about the girl in Seattle gets turned and then fights and dies. Wonderful. And so I'm thinking, we've waited this long for this book, and the reason it didn't come out a few years ago was someone had leaked her manuscript and went online, and she was so disheartened by it that she gave up on editing it and finishing it. And so you have to feel bad for Stephanie Meyer.
Yeah.
A few years later, she's like, I'm going to do it again. I'm going to do it. It's an anniversary. Let's get it out. And she got the book out. And millions of copies sold, Yoni. Millions of people out
warming
there
themselves by the fire.
I walked out of that bookstore in Leavenworth, Washington, thinking I had struck gold. On release day, I found an autographed copy in an independent bookstore in
Even if I know the
town.
Book's not good, I'm still excited for you to have an autographed copy. It's just...
You know, every time I go on vacation, my husband says to me, you have good luck when you're on vacation in bookstores. Mm. Walk into an independent bookstore, see what happens.
Yeah.
So the reason I found it was because It's All Spiel was shelved with nonfiction. And I went over to the front and said, this is not nonfiction, although it may ring true. This is a work of
every
YA.
Author has put their insecurities on this, anxiety on this page.
Right.
But
this is not a nonfiction collection about anxiety. This is a fiction collection about anxiety.
Correct.
I said, but thank you for carrying it here.
Yeah, yeah.
So she goes, oh, let's reshelve it together. And she showed me where she was going to put it. And we walk over and she puts it on the shelf. And all of a sudden I'm like, wait, what's that on this shelf in YA? Midnight Sun, and I pick up a copy. It doesn't say it's autographed, but I open it, and there's the autograph. And she goes, oh, how did I miss that? Let me go grab my stickers and start labeling the ones that are autographed. And I'm like, ah. I clutched it to my chest. I read it in the car. I was so eager. I thought that maybe the bad parts were hiccups and that I would slowly get into a groove. And someone said to me, get past page 100. I said, okay.
That's a lot.
It's a lot, but in a 600-something page book... Right.
That's fair.
So in a 700-page book, I thought, okay, fine. I get past page 100. It gets a little okay, but then it sinks backwards again. A little. So it's like this book where you have two pages that are great and then 20 or 30 pages that are a waste.
One of the TikTokers I watch, his whole thing is he has a series just where he plays the audiobook and then reacts to it. And, you know.
That's I love that.
And so, like, I've actually ingested... through the story, through that.
You've ingested Midnight Sun?
Through the audiobook with some interpretive dance in front of it, which is amazing.
Oh, man.
And the most recent one was like a whole scene where he's in the field calculating the number of bugs by weight.
Yes.
And square footage and this and that. And it was just like...
And he's doing it to distract himself from murdering his girlfriend.
Yeah, which, okay, all right. You know, cold showers, thinking of the queen, doing... Yeah. Math. Okay, sure. Okay.
So he spends a lot of time justifying why... Okay, so I feel like Stephanie said to herself, people need to know that Edward had to be with Bella. But instead of explaining it the way we understood it in Twilight, which was they are soulmates, they're just meant to be together, and we'll understand that as we go. Instead of that, she goes inside Edward's head, first-person point of view, and has him saying, I'm attracted to her blood, it smells really good, if I can just get past the burning feeling of wanting to murder her, then it'll be a huge accomplishment for
me. Also, not a good relationship goal. Just right. saying, for those of you out there,
yes.
Red flags in relationships, that's
one. It's not a lot about her.
Mm-hmm.
You really don't get a clear picture of Bella in this book. It's all like
I've never thinking felt about himself. A burning desire to murder and love someone so much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But both, well, you could feel a burning desire to murder someone.
Right. I've never also felt, well, maybe, I mean, is it bad to say children? Because it just seems like that's bad. But well, yeah, no.
Yeah. But not really, because you don't really want to murder them. You just are angry that the thing happened. Correct. You're like, how did I raise this?
I don't
That's
know.
Frustrating. I didn't raise you this way. Right.
2 days ago, wait, is Tishrei? I'm like, I pay so much. I want a refund. I want a refund.
For school. Oh my God. Yeah, so here's, this is what happened, is I'm reading this hoping it'll get better and telling people, oh yeah, it's super fun, super nostalgic, and then slowly but surely you realize that Edward's justifications for being with her are all about self-immolation. Like, if I can overcome my desire to sin, it'll make me a better person, which again is very Mormon.
Because I'm
Mormon.
A horrible person, I don't deserve love.
Right.
Because there's also that.
And then I'll deserve it if I... Mm-hmm. So it's a very... Listen, I don't know a lot about Mormonism, but I know enough to know that concept. Mm. That the concept of being challenged with temptations in our lives, like our instincts that tempt us to things.
Yeah.
And that if you have that instinct that tempts you to something, that's God's way of saying you need to overcome that instinct. It's like, you know...
I mean, it's interesting because in Teshuvah, you've completed your Teshuvah when you're faced with the same challenge.
Yeah.
And you make the better choice.
Right. We don't have something that different.
Except that we are not supposed to continue challenging ourselves with the thing that challenges us.
On purpose.
Like, if you have an issue with a certain mitzvah, you're supposed to make it so that it's easier for you to do that mitzvah, or, like, you're strengthening yourself, but you don't continually put yourself in a position where you're always being challenged over and over again, because that's not how we value our mitzvah practice.
Right. Like, I had this conversation with someone today. One of my son's friends was talking about how he had said, I could skip school mincha because I'll go to mincha later because I know that I'm going to have to go to Marv, so therefore you could trust me that I'll go to mincha. And the teacher said, no, we have a concept called Rizus, which means, you know, the mitzvah's in front of you, do it now. And you don't know what kind of temptations are going to get you between now and tonight. You don't know what personality traits are going to change and what evolving, and maybe you watch a movie you like, and maybe, you know, so this conversation happened. Basically, that's why it's in front of you, do it now.
It's not like, you know what, I have a hard time getting up for Minion. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to stay up late every night so that when I wake up for Minion, it'll be even more important that I did so, because I'll be so tired. I'll be proving to myself that I'm really doing it. And you're like, no, just go to sleep.
Right. Why would you make it harder on yourself? They actually say that, I remember learning in high school, this one in the class, that the mitzvot that are easier are actually the ones you get more of a reward for because you get complacent.
You'll drop them, yeah.
Yeah. Whereas the mitzvot that are harder, you get like a feeling of satisfaction for having gone out of your way to do them and challenge yourself. And, well, you're not going to do that twice. You're not going to do that three times. Like, it's not, you know, so you actually get more of a mitzvah for remembering Modani every morning because, you know, you get complacent, you roll out of bed, you forget. Right.
I think we also think, like, if you go to bed so that you can wake up for Minyan, then the act of going to bed is part of your mitzvah.
It's a good thing.
Of going to Minyan, right?
Right.
So, like, it's funny because I just, right now, before I came over, bought a Rosh Hashanah Machzor because I realized we were one short.
Oh.
And I was like, I know. It's coming in October. It's not here in time for this year. But can I say that I am already ready for next year's Rosh Hashanah? 2 days after Rosh Hashanah? Yes, I can.
We actually need
that is the
also.
Best time to do
that.
It.
You're right. Should do that too.
I always buy Sukkot stuff immediately after Sukkot because it's one of those things, like, you're not going to remember next year what you need. During Pesach, right after Pesach is when you have to buy your Pesach. Like, there's an idea for being prepared for something. And don't, like, wait and say, I'll remember to do it later and whatever. Just do it.
Put yourself in a position to succeed.
100%.
You do not climb through the window of a girl's bedroom. Sit in the rocking chair in the corner.
I'm just
going
to sit here smelling her, but not killing her.
Yeah. I'm here to prove that I can overcome this so that my family is not forced to leave town. And I'm like, because I know that if we do leave town, I'll just be tempted to come back here and come back anyway. And I'm like, well, no, that's not. No, you have choices in life. We have free will. And that's not. It's a different concept that you're looking at inside his head.
And it's interesting to go back to, like, you know, it's funny that I think most of the anger we have about the book is not like it's just bad, because that's not it. It's like,
no, not at all. She's wanted, a very talented writer.
Right, but I think it's also like she gave us characters we care enough about. We're like, God, we want to know, who was Edward before? What was his life like? Yes. What his family? Let's hear more about them so and what they're
there's
doing.
There's a hint of that where he talks about how the blonde sister chick, whatever, mm-hmm. he thought for some reason, like when she was made a vampire, that she was intended for him, but they didn't have that relationship and didn't connect. Mm-hmm. So they go back and show, spoiler, how one day they're out hunting and she rescues a hunter, and the hunter's Emmett. And she says, I feel this urge that this man must be saved. Oh. And you must turn him into a vampire. He's dying. He's dying. He got into a fight with a bear. And the bear won. And this man is dying. But if you don't save him, I won't be able to live my life.
Wow.
And so
he That's what we want more of.
That's what I want more of. So he gets turned. And that's when Edward looks at Emma and her and Rosalie and goes, oh my God, people have soulmates. And they just know when they know. Which is beautiful. But when he's with Bella, you don't see that. You see him obsessing over his own desire to say, I am such a good person for letting her live her human life so that she doesn't have to be like me. I am so self-sacrificing. And I'm like, tell me why you love her. Tell me why you love her just for 1 second.
What is it about her?
What is it? What is it that makes you say, this person must be with me?
Yeah.
And it's not about stalking and it's not about murder. It's about love. Because that's what I thought we were going to get.
I know. And so that, again, it's because we want the story.
Yeah.
Like, I definitely read books and been like, well, I don't know why that got written.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what story you were trying to tell, but it didn't need to be told. But this, like, I feel like there are stories. Like, she's given us a world and we want more of it.
Yes.
You know?
So. We felt the urge for it. We loved it when we were watching it and when we were reading it and when we were talking about it with each other. And then I feel sad about it because I know that she's a talented writer and I know that she has other series and books and that she does not need our money. Right? Like,
She could just,
Right. And I know
because it's also your critiques. You are bearing yourself to, I mean, there's going to be, even if it had been well received by those of us who were looking to love it.
Yeah.
There's always going to be that angry mob of commenters who are like, 1 star, too many vampires. And you're like, what did you think was happening?
I was looking up that Nazi romance from 2015 that won all those romance awards and people were really mad. The one about the Christian faith one. Mm. The one that was called like A Time Such as This or something.
Mm.
And whatever. I don't remember the exact name. But basically it was the one with the concentration camp guard who falls in love with one of the Jewish girls. And they fall at Theresienstadt. And she falls in love with him. And meanwhile, she's very mad at God because how could God do this to all my people? So now she's ready to abandon her faith when she falls in love with a Nazi who's Christian. And after the war, they marry, he keeps her alive. And then after the war, they marry and she converts to Christianity, where God would never have done this to Christians. I'm like, yeah, I know you. What? this book won so much praise. I looked on Amazon today. Five star.
But no one expects the Spanish Inquisition.
Yeah.
This is why no one expects it, because they don't learn history.
No.
Wow.
Isn't that great? You didn't know about this?
No.
This was the origin of people starting to notice that in the Christian faith book market, there's a lot of redeemable Gross. German stuff.
Gross.
Yeah.
Gross.
Now, mind you, there is a book that is just starting to get attention now, which I hope people don't rip on, that isn't actually about a person falling in love with a Nazi. It's about two people spying on each other because they both think that the other one is the Nazi.
Oh, when it turns out, so that could be fun.
Yeah, it turns out neither of them are, but you have to dig for that. The marketing makes it look like one of them is.
You know what? And I'll say that more than once, the marketing has really like done a disservice.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that it comes out what the book is actually about.
Yeah.
Because
they both have a secret. Right. And by the way, you don't even need to pretend, like, hold that back. You tell me it's about two people who think the other one is a Nazi, but neither of them are. That's the whole pitch.
I'm in.
Yeah. You just don't hide them all.
I'm in.
That's a good...
What is it? True Lies, but Nazis.
Yes.
I'm in.
Don't hide the ball. I'm in on that. And it takes place in America, so they both think they're trying to catch an infiltrating Nazi spy. So
cool.
Yeah.
Okay, that would be good.
Yes, meanwhile, they're both being manipulated.
Because I definitely saw the Jewish Nazi love, but they're both men, and you're like, it's still not okay.
I saw that one too. The Jewish guy is a photographer, and he runs a brothel for men, and he takes photos of all the Nazis and their whatever, and he falls in love with one of them, and he doesn't know if he should use the footage, and I'm like, wait, he falls in love with, what? Like, that's the part that got me.
Still not okay. Yeah. Being doubly repressed does not make you a better love object.
Right. Either way, it's probably, the issue that we have, and we've mentioned this before, is that we were raised around a lot of the information, but a lot of non-Jews were raised with this word. I was just following orders. So they were raised believing that Nazis were just following orders and that therefore it could happen anytime, any place, as long as the government gives you an order to murder someone, you'll do it. And I'm like, well, that's not what happened here. What happened here is the Nazis rose to do this. They weren't like regular soldiers, and then Hitler rose and they're like, kill people, and the regular soldiers are like, okay, we'll be Nazis now. Like, they were part of the revolution. They were a team.
Yeah.
And they were an excited team, and people who didn't want to murder people just got sent to work behind a desk. And I want people to know this information, but every time we see a book portraying an innocent Nazi guard, he's only trying to save one person, but he's still pulling the switch.
100%. That's the whole thing about the one you were talking about before. It's like, well, you know, how could God... No, your boyfriend did that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Just saying.
Him, the guy that you're falling in love with.
Just did it.
I want you to look at who's holding the gun.
Just did it.
Yeah. Who's the one holding it?
He saved you, but that's
not... He saved you because you were pretty and blonde.
Right. Not... Yeah. Not like... He wasn't, like, taking a bunch of Jews out and fell in love with one of the ones he was saving.
Right.
He just, like, picked one and was like, you're pretty, I'll keep you.
Yeah. This isn't one of those situations where he stood there not wanting to pull the switch and a Nazi said, do it. And then other Nazi was like, fine, you're making me. It's not really historically accurate.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people were raised thinking that is historically accurate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're not trying to retcon the Holocaust.
Yeah.
And I think the issue we have is that a lot of those romance novels retcon the Holocaust. And if you're deliberately doing that, like Jojo Rabbit or Inglourious Bastards, you do it with tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
That's good art. Right? Like, you're saying, I'm retconning on purpose, and everyone's going to participate and have, like, a fantasy of what it could be.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. Like, what's his name? Xavier, right? In the concentration camp, like, using...
Oh, yeah. Yes. Those kinds of things are exciting and different and new, and I keep going back to Fever King, but it has a lot of that same, like, you know, it subverts it because some of the people in power are there because they were the ones who were once repressed.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, it's one of those, like, people who were mistreated then become the evildoers themselves because power does that. Was absolute power corrupts
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, so, like, those ones are interesting. You know, just the straight up, well, I'll just make romance out of it. There's plenty of other good romance out there. I've read so many.
Let's hear.
Also many. Oh my
what
God.
What you got? You brought a stack with you? That's not even that as big as your regular stack.
It's not because I've been reading a lot of ebooks also, but so this.
From this book from the Massapequa Public Library, and we don't know the Massapequa.
I bought it used, and can I tell you, you know how sometimes you do something and you're like, I'm a freaking genius?
Yeah.
So all of a sudden I'm like, I ordered used books. And you know how also you just buy things and it appears at your door and you're like, who bought this? And whatever. So it was like that. I open a box and an entire series comes out. I'm like, who ordered the whole... I ordered a whole series? I'm a genius.
You are a genius. That's the way to go.
I ordered all three of them. So this is Amanda Boucher. And I've read her... She has a romance in space series that's fabulous. This is romance in fantasy. And so it's got some of the same tropes. It's a trilogy, and I haven't read the third one yet, and I'm dying to, but I'm also sad in that she is obviously leading it to a nice wrap-up, and I'm a little sad about that because I don't want it to end. I'm enjoying it immensely, but the main character is so sassy and mouthy and, like, just god-awful obnoxious, but she's also the heroine, and she's, you know... she's got magical powers, and she's...
I mean, obviously.
Right? And she's not exactly a teenager.
She looks like Wonder Woman on the cover.
This is the second one, because I loaned out the first one.
Yeah.
So she is taken from a circus by a warlord.
Books with a circus.
Right.
Love so books with a circus.
She's hiding in a circus, and a warlord comes and kidnaps her to use her magical powers for him.
You know what? That's always what happens when you're in a circus. Someone's going to come and show up and look for the one who's really doing the tricks and say,
yes,
I'm going to turn you into something. Yeah.
So, except that, you know, she... That's why I can never join a
circus.
Right. So, she's an unreliable narrator.
Oh.
Because no one in the book is who she thinks they are. And she's very quick to judge. And so, as you're reading the first book, you're discovering who everyone is and... She is also not frank about who she is. So You, the reader, don't know who she is because she doesn't tell anybody. So by the second book, everything's revealed. And And by the second book, she's like, you know, accepted who she is, who everyone else is, and what her part is in the coming war that's foretold. Mm-hmm. So, and it's super spicy.
I was going to say, is there any saucy scenes?
It's very spicy.
Where is the crack in the spine here? No, there is no crack in the spine. You've not gotten to any saucy scenes
so
yet.
So I'll say that the first one is definitely spicier than the second one. But it was very spicy. Like,
oh wait, found it. I literally opened it to the only crack in the spine.
Yeah.
And found immediate, you know,
they have a very healthy
soft grunting and wriggling in laps and tongue fluttering.
This is just
on one page.
And I'll say that this other one is also the second in the series.
So ooh, that one has a pretty cover.
This one is, and so this is a fantasy series. It takes place in a fantasy world that is...
Which one? The one that I handed back
Amanda
to you?
Amanda Boucher, yeah. And what is the world supposed to be?
Well, what's the title of the book?
They're Egyptian, not Egyptian, it's Roman gods, Greek and Roman gods. So it's kind of that
time
period.
Is the whole series called Breath?
It's of fire. So it's Promise of Fire, Breath of Fire, and Heart of Fire, I think, something
the
like that.
The of fire series.
Yeah.
But tell me
so
about this pretty
that
thing.
One, it takes place in Victorian England, which is my favorite.
Oh, yum!
And it's a cozy mystery. And it's also very salty, but there's no sex because it's Victorian. But this, the main character, Veronica Speedwell, she's a lepidopterist, so she collects butterflies. So she is traveling.
What's the word?
Lepidopterist. Anyway, you'll correct me in the later. And so at the age of 27 or whatever she is, she has now traveled the world multiple times, catching butterflies and documenting them, writing articles and all that stuff. So she is very well traveled. And she has a couple things about her. One, she was raised as an orphan.
Yeah.
Two, she doesn't take lovers in England, but she will take them wherever else she is.
Reputation related? Is that
no,
why?
No, just, you know, she doesn't want... But there's a very crude saying about, you know, keeping one's own pool clean.
Yeah.
She doesn't want to run into
don't
them
later.
Don't
dip in the company ink, that kind of a thing.
Yeah, she doesn't want to run into them later. Yeah. So it's much safer to be on, like, the Swiss Alps with a shepherd and never seeing him again than to run into him in society.
Yeah.
So so in the very first book, which is called... This is the second book. So the first book is called A Curious... Something. Hold on a second. The first book is called A Curious Beginning. She's kidnapped because a man thinks that she has committed a murder, and he is out to solve the murder. And so together they end up solving the murder. A little spoiler there. And the rest of the books are
The
two of them are... scientists of various, you know, studies. They're setting up a museum, but they dabble in mystery solving because they're both at least somewhat tangentially related to the high society. So, like, Stoker is, like, the third Viscount's son.
Yeah.
And she is who she is. She's kind of tangential to some pretty high-powered people, but not directly in the society. So that means they're very convenient for society folks to hire or to engage. They can move in those circles, but they're kind of removed from it.
Oh.
So they're solving murders and whatnot. And so they're fun, but like this one, I literally laughed out loud because there's a little old woman who has a vicar who travels with her.
Vicar. Yeah.
Well, the reason she brings the vicar with is because he He's narcoleptic.
Okay.
He's slightly deaf, but apparently very, very well endowed.
I was going to say, is he a vicar that can service her personally?
Correct.
Wow, he can really tend to his flock.
Correct.
Just a flock of one.
And they say it out loud. It's very funny because in the scene, they're at tea and this old lady just says it out loud and I almost died. And then like one of the other characters, I'm like, oh, you and I are together in this, you know, shock and this is blushing and whatever.
And it's a Veronica Speedwell mystery, a perilous undertaking by New York Times bestselling author Deanna Rayborn.
So I'm enjoying them. They're fun. They're saucy.
I love that. I love the look of it too.
You know, yeah, they've got like a fun art on the cover and stuff.
You brought another one.
Yeah, I don't like that one so much.
Oh, are you willing to say what? It's hard because you don't want to, you know, give negative, yeah. But
I'll say that, like, it had a really, it was a sci-fi book. It's got a really great setup, very ingenious. What I don't like is that the author unwinds all of the stakes in the end of the book.
Okay.
So, like, everything that was broken is fixed. Everyone who died comes back, and it's just kind of like, oh.
Well, I mean, you want to end your book with your readers wondering what's going to happen next and imagining it for themselves a little bit. Not on a cliffhanger, but you want to wrap it up saying, do you think this character will go this way with his life or that way with his life? Let's all talk about it. What do you think he would do?
And it's also like if someone sacrifices them for the greater good and then you bring them back using magic, then it's kind of like,
there's no stakes left.
But why, you know, so your sacrifices is, imagine if Snape, like, somehow they were able to bring him back because whatever, or I'm not.
It would have no, it would have lots of meaning.
Yeah, like the whole point, spoilers, of the deaths in Harry Potter, as much as whatever.
I
mean, I shouldn't talk about Harry Potter, but like the death of a character in a book should mean something.
Yes.
Right? Like the only reason we hate the deaths in Game of Thrones is because they mean something. If we knew they were going to just, like, pop back to life, then, like, you can't get angry about
right.
that.
Right, and you, the only time a death, a person should come back is if the characters that he's coming back for have moved on with their lives.
And it disrupts them.
And it disrupts
whole,
them.
Right, you could do it in a whole
telenovela
way.
Right,
like, you thought I was dead, but I was alive the whole time.
You moved on. You got remarried. Meanwhile, I was on an island with a soccer ball just trying to stay alive.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Otherwise, it's like,
yeah,
it's, you know, the Newhart effect where you just wake up and you're like, oh, that never happened.
That never happened. And you're like, that's annoying. It's like when you find out at the end of a book that it was all a dream. You want it. Mm-hmm. You want there to be stakes. And you want it, like, if you're going to end your book with someone coming back, it should be a cliffhanger. They're back. So, for example, the last line in the Wicked series. So, this is a big spoiler because not everyone has made it all the way through. In the last line, we see, at this point, we are pretty much under the impression that Elphaba, the Wicked Witch of the Green One, that she is dead. We have been under this impression for, like, two books. And at this point, at the end of the last book, Glinda, the good witch, is in prison. She's in a prison cell, and everything has gone to crap. And all of a sudden, the door opens to the cell. Glinda looks up and basically says, I'm wondering where you've been, or something like that. Like,
I'm
wondering when you were going to get here.
Not overtly, but, like, this
and
implied?
The implication is that it's Elphaba because all the other characters are accounted for. So the implication is that since we never actually witnessed Elphaba's death, but we do know she died. Well, how do we know she died?
I love it.
Right? Like, so there's an implication. So that Gregory Maguire has nothing imminently coming out.
Yeah.
So he could have just left it like that so that we could imagine a world in which the two of them, witches, go off, disappear from Oz together. I like that idea that you can imagine that. But it doesn't retcon the story.
No.
Right? It just creates a little nugget of happiness.
I'll say that I've even read books where they're like, oh, that was an alternate universe.
Yeah.
But the character is haunted by the death that they saw, even if the person is alive in front of them. They're like, I saw you die.
Yeah.
Like, I can't just get over the fact that you died in my arms and now you're alive like nothing
happened. Like Thursday next books. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yes. The stuff with the husband. Right, yes. Isn't in some iterations he's dead, and in some iterations he's alive.
Her dad
timeline.
Also.
Yes.
Yeah, her dad also is like, some people don't remember him, and some people do, and her husband, and yeah.
The so time traveler's wife has moments like that also, where he, for once she, the point at which she doesn't know he's died yet, right? So like it's hard for her to see him, but at the ages where she does know, then she like waits for him. Like she knows like, I'm going to get to see someone I watch die. but I'm going to see him before he knows.
Before he knows.
So his you know, so the guy basically, let's say 25, he accidentally gets time traveled to 15 years later and gets to see his wife 15 years older. The problem is he doesn't know that in those 15 years he dies. So he's seeing her and she's like, oh my God, there's my husband.
There's a lot of ways to do it so that you're not removing the stakes.
Yeah. In fact, the stakes are even higher when that happens because it's like you get to consider the emotional weight of seeing someone for one moment who died years ago.
Yeah.
Ugh, just sit with that.
So if you, does that mean that if there was a loved one and you just wanted to see them one more time, you would just show up in their bedroom while they're sleeping
and sit on a chair? We'll watch them sleep and roll over. And, oh, she said my name in her sleep, Edward. Oh, he's so self-centered. I can't. He loves
Jesus. It is less creepy if they actually know each other when it happens.
It was, right. It was all part of his obsession with no longer wanting to murder her.
Yeah, I don't think that's compelling.
But they don't show how that turns into love. They don't show it. When the only time you begin to realize that he likes her is when she doesn't realize she's pretty and he tells her she is. You don't realize you're beautiful?
Yeah, but now I don't think he thinks she's beautiful. I think he thinks that she's a snack.
Right.
And not like the colloquial snack.
You a snack.
But like, I legitimately think you're a snack. Yeah. And that's what's attractive about you. It's like, you're looking really like, you know, my favorite food today. Like,
you look delicious. Yeah. And not like, you look delicious, but rather like, I think I would like to take a bite of that.
But literally.
And I would kill all of your bio classmates to do it, and the teacher.
100%. Yes. There'd be a bloodbath. It would be amazing.
It would be a bloodbath, but it's a bio lab.
We Even have that story equipment. Might have been a better story.
If he'd actually done it, that version of it. Yeah. See, that would have been hilarious. If she had come out with a 700-page book.
Oh my God, he keeps like low-key killing someone and having to hide it in between. And he's like, damn it, every time she looks good, I have to go kill a hobo.
Yeah.
You know?
A whole history of killing. Well, that happens, the hobo thing, they explain that. If you recall, in the movie, you might have a better recollection from the film. She almost gets attacked by some men when she's in Port Angeles.
Yes. Right? I remember.
And, okay, so what they, I don't know if they explained this, I don't remember in the original, but in this version of it, he can read the man's mind, because, you know, he does that.
Oh, except for her, because Bella has no thoughts.
Right, so he can read the potential rapist's mind, and he sees all the hundreds of women that he's raped and killed in the past. Okay. So he goes to Carlisle, and he's like, we have to turn this man in somehow. So they, like, get him and...
Can't they just eat him?
Well, they decide not to eat him. They want him to have justice. Mm-hmm. So they get him and they catch him and they... And Carlisle drops him off down in Oregon and police him where he's wanted.
Okay.
Lucky man that he was wanted. Otherwise, they would have had to just eat him.
I still feel like you could make him fear the bumps in the night before you drop him off.
Yeah. See, they don't do that. Carlisle goes straight for justice. Carlisle is a good man.
I mean, so man. There's justice and there's... We know what we did, what you did. We could drain you and leave your body by the side of the road like you did those women.
And show me that as a reader.
That would be so good.
And instead I have to see, I keep going back to this because it's so awful. Instead I have to see Edward reading everyone's minds and having conversations with people in order to keep track of what Bella's doing throughout the day. He tries to read the minds of the people who are talking to her on the other side of the building. So, like, if Bella happens to be in English class with a girl, he's like, I'll read the girl's mind and I'll see what she's thinking about Bella right now. I'm not kidding.
Also, like, the whole point about Bella is that, like, we don't see her connect with anyone else at school.
Right.
So, I guess that's somewhat interesting that we see what her classmates think about her because we don't see that in the original book.
Right, but it's still very shallow. What her classmates think about her is... oh my gosh, she's the brand new hot thing and all the boys want to take her out. How annoying. That's all they ever think about her. They never think anything else. It's all related to boys asking her out on dates and her turning them down.
So it doesn't pass the Bechdel test is what you're saying?
No, you never really... The girls that she's friends with, when Edward reads their minds, they're all thinking, how did she get Edward? They're not thinking about her and her math quiz and if she looks cute in that outfit. They're thinking, why is Edward talking to her? She's not as cute as other girls. So they're all judging each other. Wow. All the girls in the book are just
all mean girls, but not just...
But in their heads. So all the girls in the book are just like super jelly of Bella all the time. And they don't give, so basically none of the girls get any grace from Edward. Which again, Stephanie Meyer said it was a hard character to write because she's like, he's very anxious and he hates himself a lot and he has a hard time making decisions.
Yeah, but like, so then why doesn't he kill everyone if no one's redeemable?
Right. What, no one's,
you know what I mean? It's not like he sees, I see the humanity in all of these people. I see they're good, so I can't kill them. It really just sounds like he could just kill them all. Like, there's nothing good about them.
But none of the vamps are redeemable either, because he admits at one point that they've all made mistakes. That they've all accidentally killed someone they couldn't resist at some point that wasn't a bad person. Like, oh, there was that one person in this town, the one person in Ohio. Like, it was an accident, but...
I guess... I just feel like, you know, even even setting aside loving Bella, like, show me why you care about people. Why are you in this high school?
Yes.
Why aren't you pretending to be homeschooled?
So they don't even explain that really that well. She doesn't explain it that well. The explanation you should have for that is that you move every 4 years.
Yeah, but why at high school? You could just pretend you're in college. You're in community college.
Right.
Start a new community college. You could learn more. Why high school?
Why high school? No, but apparently he has a medical degree.
Again, why is apparently he hanging out in a high school? Apparently at some
point he went to med school. They let him finish all the way through before they moved.
But why is he in
So why high go school? Back to high school? Why not just be a Doogie Howser character?
Ugh. No, because that gets you noticed. So that I can see parts of it, but it's just like...
If you don't want to be noticed, then homeschool your kids.
You're 100 years old. You're 300 years old.
So I think this is the magical thinking we just have to accept. That we have to buy into the premise that, like, they go to high school for a few years and start over, and it's annoying.
So there was a romance novel I read that, so he is a vampire. He's a vampire. And he is going after this teenage girl because he's in love with her. Sounds familiar?
Yes.
But why is he in love with her? Because she is the reincarnation of the girl he loved when he was a teenager.
Aww.
And so every time she dies, he goes to find her. But he waits till she's old enough to be not creepy.
This is a plot point in What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh!
Do you not watch that show?
No!
There's a woman on the show, vamp, who in every single lifetime... She has this lover, human lover, who always gets beheaded.
So the same thing with this girl.
Somehow. He gets beheaded by a car, by a train. He gets beheaded by a, by a knight in the past. But like, yes, they always find each other.
So that's the thing. It's like, okay, so he's like, every time you die, I gotta wait till you grow up again.
Oh, that's
and you know such you're a teenager.
Good premise.
You know, and so like it's not like I've got a thing for teenagers and I'm 1,000 years old.
Does she recognize the connection each time?
So I mean, I didn't say the name of the book, but so it's a part of a whole series. It was actually I loved it so much, but I think I might have it. So she doesn't recognize him because the problem is that the vampire who turned him is jealous of his love of this. Human and hunts her down and before the girl dies turns her against him or sometimes she finds her first turns her so she's afraid of her soulmate and so then he has to know that he hates her and she keeps doing this like time and so it's a race now where is she reincarnated. Who finds her first?
Whoa.
How do we protect her? Because this one is trying to turn her and there's werewolves and there's like a whole thing.
That's very high stakes.
So yeah, but the whole thing is it's not like I have a thing for teenagers. It's for God's sake, just grow. Like,
just wait. It's the waiting.
Live to be an adult so that we can be together as adults instead of
temporarily
dying and then coming and waiting, that kind of thing. So yeah, it was super, super, super good. I loved it. And again,
that's right up my alley.
Right, so it's like, yeah, he's stalking her and he's following her, but he's trying to keep her safe and he's trying to, like, whatever. And every time she dies, he's got to do it again and,
Well, so speaking of books, I want to read. What are you reading right now?
Okay.
What's your next read?
So I'm reading the third in the Veronica Speedwell in person.
Okay.
In real life. And then in ebook, I'm reading The Love of Dr. Thorne, because that's a miniseries. Hold on. The Love of Dr. Steele. The Heart of Dr. Steele. So I'm really very you know, new in it. So there's a girl and a doctor has moved into his aunt's home next door, and there's a lot of rumors about him and why isn't he doctoring in the neighborhood and whatever. And why hasn't he introduced himself to society? So, but she doesn't want to make assumptions based on rumors. So she tries to befriend him. And I think that there's a hint that he's an alcoholic. I haven't quite gotten into that yet.
Oh.
So I'm reading that.
Yeah, let me get my list out as well.
I just started that one because I just finished.
Yeah.
I just finished Murders in the Air and Once Upon a Time in Bath. Okay. And those are both, I mean, I really do love my cozy mysteries.
So I'm reading Gods of Jade and Shadow by Sylvia Marina Garcia.
That's on my list.
Oh God, she's so good. So this is the mm-hmm. same author of Mexican Gothic, but she wrote this first. I wanted to read it first. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it is about it's set in Mexico. It's a lot of Mayan gods and culture, mm-hmm. which is really cool. And I believe it is set in the 1920s. And it's about a girl who accidentally opens her evil grandfather's chest at the foot of his bed and releases a trapped god who traps her into helping him get revenge on his twin brother, the other god, and it's all this Mayan folklore stuff that she's familiar with, sees it as an opportunity to like get out of her evil grandfather's house and go into the big city.
I'm so excited.
So it's great. So it's like a combination of like Mexican culture and Mayan culture and the jazz age all put into one. And then I'm also reading, because you know you have to read more than one at once.
Obviously.
I'm also about to start reading Fleischman is in Trouble. I've been putting that off for a really long time, so I finally bought it, by Taffy Bratister Ackner. So Fleischman is in Trouble is like one of those books that everyone talked about that I just kept thinking I'll get to it eventually. Yeah. Have you read it yet?
I have not, but it crossed my radar. I don't know if it made it to my to-read list, but
it's very much like not a YA. Like it's like reading Michael Chabon or Jonathan Safran Foer.
Yeah, of course. Right.
Recently separated Toby Fleischman is suddenly somehow at the age of 41, short as ever, surrounded by women who want him. Women who are self-actualized. Women who are smart, interesting. Women who don't mind his height. Women eager to take him for a test drive with the swipe of an app. Toby doesn't mind being used in this way. It's a welcome change from the 13 years he spent married. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, anyway, but Toby's new life, liver specialist by day, kids every other weekend, rabid, somewhat anonymous sex at night, is interrupted when his ex-wife suddenly disappears. Either on a vision quest or a nervous breakdown, Toby doesn't know, and she won't answer his texts or calls. So, it's a basically like...
Oh, no, I did hear about this one.
I heard it was amazing.
Okay.
I heard no one said anything but good things.
There's a scene on the train where you get into his head. I remember someone telling me about this.
I haven't started yet, and okay. One book that is on my wish list, which is coming out soon, is Jasper Ford.
Oh, he's got something. Oh,
he's got something coming. He's got something coming.
Okay. So here's what I have. It's so funny because Megan, our friend Megan, and I compared our library hold list and we overlap by like 25%. I'm like, we really have to be more efficient about this.
Okay.
So what I have is The Lost Property Office by James Hannibal. This is, I took off like the top reads for YA because I need, you know, for my kids. Love at First Like by Hannah Orenstein. The Bittersweet Ooh. Bride by Vanessa Riley, because, you know, I love that. Chocolate-Covered Murder, because, you know, I do like those. I'm sorry. More of Veronica Speedwell. The Electric Air by Dr. Victoria Lee, because Fever King was so good, I have to read the second book, because it's just has to be No Proper Lady, more of those.
Well, what about the fact that you and I are both, we both got ARCs? Of Miracles and Menorahs.
I know, I'm so
excited. By Stacey Adner.
So excited.
We're going to have Stacey on for a Hanukkah episode a month or two after the book comes out, which the book is coming out in October.
So excited.
And we will post our reviews online. We're not going to record about the reviews. We'll post the reviews. We'll save our talking about it until we get to talk to the author. But this is a book in the tradition of Hallmark Christmas movies, except it's Hanukkah, and it's purely Hanukkah.
Yes, I saw that. You know, she loves Hanukkah. It's like it's like the Hallmark trope, but only Hanukkah.
Right. So as opposed to the Hallmark one, where it was like the Hanukkah guy and the Christmas girl, and he ends up being convinced that Christmas is so great, and the stuff he shows her is like meh, right? And he's like, fruitcake is so good, and she's like, latkes are only okay. And I'm like, what the hell is happening here?
And your bubby is so
yeah,
you know.
Yes.
Cute.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, do you remember the bubby who should have clearly been called the Safta because she had an Israeli accent?
Yes.
Running the most pristine Judaica shop I've ever seen in my life and showing him the Art Scroll book where they show the photos of the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash, but she's showing it to him like it's an art book and flipping it backwards, the pages. And I'm like, stop!
Don't do that.
Stop it! This is not, why do you have one Art Scroll book on display? Where's the big stack falling off the shelves?
Nope.
Right? Sorry. One Art Scroll book, and it's not a Hanukkah book. Put out your Hanukkah stuff. People are coming in there to buy a set of, you know, So I'm really looking forward to Miracles of Menorahs, which is committed by a talented author, and it's officially coming out. Everyone else will have access to it next month, but we are special. So I'll tell you.
I know. I do have others that I'm really, 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 really looking forward to. So there's Faith, which is a graphic novel by Julie Murphy, and it's a plus-size superhero.
Julie Murphy. That's what Julie Murphy does.
Yeah, so I'm super, super excited about that. Loathe at First Sight, obviously, you know, by Suzanne Park. Vanessa Yu's Magical Paris Tea Shop by Roselle Lim.
Roselle Lim. Right?
So I'm really excited about that one.
This is a great list. I mean, people need to go to your Goodreads.
The Hating Game by Sally Thorne. Beach Read by Emily Henry. Blanche on the Lamb, which again, I love my cozy mysteries.
Blanche on the Lamb.
It's like a, the housekeeper goes on the run. This is How You Lose the Time War, which came up on a bunch of lists.
So yeah, on my I keep list. Seeing that one around.
Yeah, and Gods of Jade and Shadow is on there. I'm number 76.
Waiting to get for it. I'll just give it to you. So just take it off your request list.
The Starless Sea by, again, like I keep seeing this on lists.
So the Starless Sea, which 50% of the people said it lived up to Aaron Morgenstern's first book, The Night Circus, and the other 50% said they were hoping it would be as good and it wasn't. And I think, listen, your second book is always going to be more challenging because either people will say, wow, she gets it better with every book, or they'll say, you know, she's a one-hit wonder. And I'm like, long career.
Yeah.
They're going to have a lot of books. And one day when they have 20 books, you're not going to say, oh, they only had one good. They're going to say, oh, I like 7 of them.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's fine. That's good. You're not going to like every book an author puts out.
Although I was telling you before we started filming, recording. That, gosh, going through the books I read, I've had everything be 4 stars and above since June. Except for the one that...
Well, this was the summer of amazing releases. Like, I went down to third place books to get Marissa Cantor's new book.
I'm so happy the Roman, I love you.
Yeah, and I recommend it for you completely out. Like, there was... Yeah, they were out of things, and then they were pre-ordering things for me, because I was like, you need to pre-order stuff for me.
I had them order A Taste of Sage for me, and they got it in, and so I have it now.
They'll do it. If you ask for something, you gotta... Yeah. You gotta ask for it.
Yep.
This is the time, people, to start getting your books for Yontif.
Yes.
For Sukkot, because you're gonna have, it's not 3-day Yontifs, it's 2 days, but you're gonna need books to read.
You know what? I will say that, you know, people talk about when do you find time to read and when, you know, it's not easy. It's hard. And sometimes I make poor life choices and I stay up to read too late.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
But it's my menuchas and nefesh. Like, it gives me peace of mind and relaxation, and so I make time to do it, even if it means I have to wake up a little earlier Shabbos morning before people wake up.
Yeah,
have my coffee, I have my book, and I'll read, you know. And that means, like, could I go to my friend's house and have coffee on her deck so that I could be social? She'll understand if I'm telling her I'm reading her, especially if I slip a good book later.
Like, right. I brought a bag of books. I'm gonna go outside and read one, and you just take something from the bag.
And so, you know, we've done that where we just, like, let's meet up.
Yeah,
you bring your book. There's no pressure to converse. You have your coffee, I have my coffee, you have tea, whatever. Let's just, like, read our books together. Because then I'll tell you that my kids really, like, if I laugh out loud. Like, I've been reading these books and they're like, we either laugh so loud.
I laughed out loud for Rachel and Solomon's book for sure.
I know.
I laughed a few times.
Oh my God, I was crying.
I did. I was laughing. I'm like, oh my God, that was so funny. I gasped for the big anti-Semitic moment. I can't even say what it is because it's a major spoiler, and I'm not going to, you don't know when it's coming, and then it just comes.
Which
and
is exactly how it is in real life.
It's where exactly,
you're like, wow, did this girl in my high school just say Jew me down in front of me?
Did that, just,
that happen to me?
Right. Did that thing just happen? Or, you know, and you just kind of let it go because you're like, meh, whatever, it's not a big deal. But then you where this is a new world where you're allowed to say to the person, you did a thing and I didn't like it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so they won't do it again.
Yeah.
There was a situation, you know, I always try to throw in a story in our podcast, you know, about the literary publishing world, where a literary agent who seemed like a really nice person, and maybe she is, who's in her late 20s, I don't know what made someone look through her old tweets. Maybe she said something that threw them off.
Mm.
Maybe, you know, they got a weird email that made them question. But they started looking through her old tweets and discovered that she used to be a huge bigot. Like, not just a race. Like, she hated everyone that wasn't white. Like, it was like you could type in any denomination and get, like, 10 tweets that were just, like mean. I don't even want to repeat them because they're everywhere from jokes to outright judgmental, bigoted things and using slurs. But it was all when she was in high school and her first year in college. What changed? She went to college.
Yeah.
She met people.
Yeah.
And she may have been raised to be a white supremacist. And then she got out into the world and stopped being one because she was like, I'm a jerk. But she goes, honestly, I've been on Twitter since I was 15 years old.
Yeah.
I've got 190,000 tweets. I forgot that when I was in high school,
like a dumpster
I used to,
fire.
Yeah, she goes, like, honestly, I've been like a different person for so long.
Yeah.
I forgot. She still resigned from her job because she was like, people were like, resign, which I don't know that was necessary.
Yeah.
But
that's hard.
That's whatever happened. What I'm saying is like people grow and people change and they expose. And we want people to say, oh my God, when I was 15, I was raised to be a racist and I was. And I'm not everyone was. Not everybody was. There are white people in all white towns that aren't racist.
Yeah.
I was.
Yeah.
And she admits, like, I was. And I was a bad person. And, like, and it's obvious. Yeah. And I look back and I go, oh, my God.
I think that's something that, and I've heard it articulated much better, but I actually, like, think about it myself. It's like, and there's an idea in Judaism. Like, you're not responsible for the thought that pops in your head.
Mm-hmm.
But you're responsible for what you do with it or dwelling on it or
acting
on
it. And the words that come out of your mouth.
Correct. So, like, you know what? I find myself having thoughts and I'm like, that's not okay. And then I'm not going to make it sound like it's all whatever. But I'm, you know, you're like, oh, you know, I think about why don't I feel safe at this store? Why is that? Let me think about do I actually have a reason not to feel safe? Or is it that I am characterizing this neighborhood or the people I'm seeing here because they don't look like me. And so that's why I feel not safe. But no one's given me a reason not to feel safe. So I'm trying to be more conscious of that because that initial, like, spurt of I don't feel safe, like, I can't control that, but I can, like, stop and think, like, why do I have that? Like, is there a reason I have that? If there is, keep on keeping on.
Right.
And if there's not, then I should really think about it.
That's interesting. I like that you're, like, starting to look around yourself and go, huh, am I actually reacting appropriately to my environment? Or is this just something that I was raised to think or it's an old way of thinking or whatever. And now I'm looking around me and I'm going, huh, things seems fine, actually. Like,
you know, it's funny also because I grew up in Texas and I am more multicultural than some. Like, I grew up very white passing, so it's not like whatever. But, you know, when people talk about, like, the Mexican grocery stores or, like, the ethnic grocery stores, I'm like, yeah. You want to find the good fruits and vegetables? You
want to
find interesting food? You want to find things
that you want
that
the good popsicles? You got to go to the ethnic grocery store.
You
want to
take something that tastes like something? You need to go to other places.
Yeah.
And, like, if you want to eat plain food that you grew up with, fine. But if you want to try anything new, you have to go to a grocery store where they sell the things that whatever. So, like,
but what's interesting is that you're saying that because people didn't know that you were Latina, that people said things around you.
Oh, that happens all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that does happen all the time. And I'm like, okay. So, like, oh, yeah, no, the Shabbos table once where someone was like, yeah, that movie could have had, like, Mexicans, like, cleaning up. And I'm like, they're in St. California. That movie takes place in California. There are Asian people. There are Hispanic people living there. Like, there are a lot of people in California, like, who are doing all the things.
Right.
All the things. And also, you need to know where you are because in some places, the hotel staff, they're Russians or they're Filipino or they're, like, you have to know, like, you can't just use your bias to show your bias in your book because if your book is in a different place.
I love that you're not, that instead of saying, hey, I'm Latina. You just defended. You basically were like, actually, here's the information. You got it wrong. Right?
Have you been to California? like really?
Yeah.
Because even on Rodeo Drive, like, people be looking different. Like, there's a lot of people. I mean, I've lived in a lot of places. Like, I lived in Ohio where, like, we were the brownest people there. And I am not, like I said, I'm very white passing. So the fact that I looked different enough that people would make comments, mm-hmm. like, that tells you how homogenous that right. it was.
Yes. Yes. You know? And what's interesting is, like, what she was saying, like, people were like, you know, not everyone that grew up in a homogenous area said racist stuff. It's the same way that, you know, you hear all these stories of Jewish communities where people make racial comments.
Yeah.
And today, not yeah. our grandparents' generation, today. Yeah. And we live in a community where it's so rare that something like that happens because we're out of towners. Are you saying you hear it more often?
I do.
I don't hear it. Yeah. Who are you hanging out with, Yoni?
Trust me, I ask myself that question all the time.
Jesus, not Jesus, so, God.
Wait. But do you know why, Jessica?
Why?
Because I have the resting talk to me face.
Oh, you do.
Do you know?
People will be like, I think I should be racist to your face.
A friend of mine, you know what she told me? She's like, Yoni, I know how you feel now. Because my mask apparently covers the part of my face that makes me look unfriendly. And now people talk to me.
And people are telling you stuff where you're like, you should not be saying these things out loud. These are thoughts to stay inside your head. Please do not say this horrible thing. Or even think this horrible thing. Let's just not... With the horrible thing.
Have I told you the story about
the guy... In our town?
Have I told you about the guy in my ethics class in college? It was one of my favorite comments where I was just like, I can't... People have brains. Do they not use them? What's happening? So we're sitting there and it's an ethics class. And the question of the day was, do we have an obligation to take children from racist families? Not just like they have beliefs, but like...
No, I get it. White yeah, supremacist somebody who names families? Their kid Adolf Eichmann.
Correct. Do we right. have an obligation as a society to take those children out of that influence so that they can be better people, you know? And it's a fine line and it's a slippery slope, and that's exactly why we were talking about in ethics.
Right. Perfect.
So this guy raises his hand and he goes, you know, I don't really understand white supremacy, especially about Jewish people, because they just look like everyone else. And I was like,
that's not the point.
There's a lot of things to unpack here. It's okay if you look different. Uh-huh. And like, you don't understand why people hate Jews because they look white, but like the other ones you understand.
Right.
But
what like, you're implying one, is and... the ones I just don't get are Jews. Like, don't they just look like everybody else? Why do you hate them?
But also you still othered us by saying like, you look like your people. Like, even though you're not,
you're,
you know,
you're
like,
human passing. Like... Why do you hate them? They pass it for humans.
I was just like, what? And I didn't even respond, which I'm very mouthy and I'm very out front, but like, yeah. I couldn't, I like was, I just completely, I just sat there like, did he say that out loud? And you could tell, like, he wasn't, like, being angry, like, white power. Like, he wasn't doing that at all. He was just like, I just don't understand racism. Because he just didn't have the framework to even have a conversation about it.
Yeah.
I don't know if by the end of his the ethics class he had any of that, because I was like, almost it. She rose away from you, because I don't know what's happening.
It's so fascinating, really, what people will, like, say out loud in front of other humans. Yeah. And that's... You know, you have a face that says, talk to me.
Oh, Lord.
I have a face that says, I'm going to agree with you. And I usually don't. So yeah. Even though people aren't necessarily like blurting everything out to me, when they do talk to me, they tell me things assuming I'll be cool.
Yeah.
Like they're assuming like when they say something to me, and some people say some stuff I just am not interested in hearing. But they assume, it's the assumption that Jessica's going to be cool. Jessica's going to be cool. And I'm like, you don't know me. You don't know if I'm cool. You don't know if that's my moral level. You don't know if I think that situation that you got yourself into, like, if you did something where I'm like, that's bad. But yeah. You're telling me you were wrong. That was an evil thing that you did. And the person's like, no, it's a cool story. No, like, people don't expect me to come back at them with anything.
This morally ambiguous thing I did that yes. wasn't exactly wrong.
Yes. People,
I'm very proud of it. And you're
people
like.
People think that my face says, cool, I'm in, as opposed to no thanks, I'm cool. And I'm like, no, I'm a no thanks, I'm cool girl. Like in like the it. Commercials, like, do you want some weed? No thanks, I'm cool. Not, yeah, that's cool. No, no thanks, I'm cool. No so thanks. That's, you know, my face. So we have some great faces going on here. Let's get some masks on and then draw some angry rage eyebrows on. And we'll go to a show that way from now on.
That's a great idea.
It's a really funny idea. That's a great idea. I actually think that would really, or we can get masks that are just like, don't talk to me.
I do like that.
Just don't talk to me unless you have a book.
Ooh. Oh my gosh.
Oh.
There is an Instagram and a hashtag called Hot Men Reading.
Speaking of, and I mean, no, but like really, my husband says, I made a comment today about my book going on submission. And my husband's like, oh, this one's going to sell really fast. And I said, how do you know? You haven't even read it. Because that's very normal. Family members are like nervous to read their other family members' writing. Because the people are nervous that they're going to have to say, you know, I didn't like it. Even if it's not for you, right? And my husband's not going to read a Jewish vampire shtetl book. That's not for him. So why would he want to read something that he's not going to necessarily enjoy only to have to say to me, it's not for me, but I can see that it's objectively good. I would have liked
it, but it was too Jewish, too many foreign words, not and way spies. Too many vampires.
Yeah, not enough spies.
There could have been more explosions.
Yes. I wanted more explosions, history, spies, and mysteries. Like, which is fine. Good for you for liking the genre. I wanted
it to be more like Vince Flynn, and it just wasn't.
It just wasn't. So that's the thing. So then all of a sudden he comes, he's like, so a few minutes later he came back in the room, and he goes, do you have a hard copy of it? Like a printed out copy? Like, yeah, for editing purposes. It's not edited. Like, you're just looking at the pre-edit. He goes, no, I'll read it. And he walked away. I'm like, uh-oh. What did I do?
You made that happen.
That was terrible. I should not have done that. It's okay. I don't subtweet him in there at all. He's not in there. This is pure fantasy. There is no Jessica
in there. But I've heard from many people that they're like, oh, this character, it was me, right? You're like, honestly, no, yeah. I don't, I mean, like.
Apparently, that's why a lot of YA writers don't write parents in their books.
Oh, really?
Because some of them admit that their parents will come up to them and say, was I that bad to you? And they're like, you know what? Screw it. Dead parents. I can't handle. So I made the parents in mine nothing like my parents. Like, they're literally, there's nothing. There's nothing
that's
there.
That's amazing.
I'm like, there's nothing in it. Because I can't handle the idea of one of my parents coming up and going, is that me?
So there is a character in the book I'm writing, one of the books, where it is somebody and I hope they know it's them.
The one of the books you're writing?
Yes.
So I'm going to wrap us up with a writing tip. How's that for the day? My writing tip is something a friend of mine and I were discussing earlier when she was talking about having multiple points of views in a book. Hmm. It's scary for her. And I said, it's not scary. Think of it this way. When you have a book you have to write, let's say you have to make it 80,000 words. That's a big project to undertake. Yeah. I go, well, what if you have 3 or 4 points of view?
Mm-hmm.
That's only 4 20,000 word books. I said, I have 10 20,000 word abandoned books on my laptop right now. If I just change the character names, I could put them all together and make another one. My writing tip to you is multiple points of view will help you finish your book faster, at least for the first draft. And then you could always change it afterwards to a different POV.
So the Priory of the Orange Tree is like that. It's a multi POV. And it reads like 4 books interwoven around. And you're like, but how do these people all get together? And so it was great. It's 700 pages, though.
Oh, well, so what happened was the author sat at home and said, I want to make it easier on myself. So instead of writing one long book, I'm going to write 4 medium books.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it worked
beautifully. And that's my writing tip to you, Yonit. Like, so Yonit, let's tell our devoted listeners who come back to us after 3 months where they can find you on social.
So I am Yonit DM everywhere. And everywhere. Oh, not everywhere.
She's everywhere.
I'm not going to tell you where I am on TikTok because it's secret.
On BookTok?
Yes.
You're on the BookTok.
A little bit.
Okay. Tell us where you are everywhere else.
Everywhere else on Yonit DM.
That's right. Even Goodreads.
Even Goodreads. Yeah, yes. I mean, I'm reading good stuff.
So. And I am Hoffman Jess on Twitter. Find me there and tweet at me and tell me what you want us to talk about. Mm-hmm. Or just yell. I don't care. Or give me book recs. That's my favorite. Book recs. We love book recs.
I need maybe less of those. Less of those.
No such thing, you liar.
Can people just stop writing books for like 6 months? I might be able to get a handle on this.
No.
Just slow down.
Sorry. No. It's release month. Thank you for joining us today. Volcano, Moshe Ainu.